It is Saturday breakfast. Good morning. James Lush with you. As promised, Maurice Misiolaski is joining us now on the programme. Joins us every few weeks to look at the future of, add all sorts of different subjects to discussion. Today we're talking about the future of finance, talking about the future of your money, and talking in particular about our new world of financial intimacy. What do I mean by that? Maurice, good morning to you.
Good morning, James.
Let's talk about this. We are, because of technology, much more, I suppose, on top of our finances, and yet, in many ways, very distant from it. It's a strange world that we're living in with our finances.
It really is, and I think in Australia our story started in the early 70s when we began to have credit cards. Before then, most people would lay by, they'd put money into envelopes, and whenever they ran out of cash, they literally ran out of cash. There was nothing else you could do.
Yep.
The last 40 years or so, we've become more accustomed to saying, well, I don't have it today, but I kind of got a bit of plastic that'll let me have it tomorrow, and I'll pay it off then. And the more distance we put between ourselves and the actual physical folding stuff, the more comfortable we were with spending beyond our limits and not really having a good insight into what our financial health and well-being is. Roll it forward 40 years to today. And now that we're starting to do online banking, which 10 years ago, James, everybody told me would never happen. I mean, every audience member said it's not in my lifetime. Now we do 80% of our retail banking online. We're doing 40% of our retail banking through apps already, and that's only a two-year story. There's so much digital information about what we're spending and where we're spending it and what we have in our accounts and what we want to achieve. At the moment, they're not well connected. They're all digitally there in different spots, different websites, different apps, but not well connected. But literally, this year, last year, we're starting to see a whole lot of apps, a whole lot of banking thought, a whole lot of financial wisdom around what if we can put all that information together into one space, put it on people's screens and make it available to them 24/7 in real time. And that brings us to financial intimacy, which is what we're talking about. The notion that if we have the information at our fingertips, if we have our noses rubbed on our screen all the time and we're seeing this stuff, I believe human nature is we'll start to feel more connected to money, even though it's still digital, and we'll have to start making better decisions about it.
Mm. Okay, it's a good point. With a bit of plastic in our hands, we can go crazy. And if you look at the Western world in particular, we've been living out and dining out on credit for some time. The reality is it's money we often don't have, but you know, we only get a bill every month or so, therefore we live with it. But what about that digital world? Why will that change our behavior, do you think?
It comes back to the core of human nature, and human nature to me is always that once we become aware of something, we really have to do something about it. We may choose to ignore it, but it becomes a really conscious choice then. At the moment, we are really disconnected. As you said, we get the ulch once a month when the bill comes. We chastise ourselves for about 45 seconds, then we go out and we do a bit of retail therapy to get over it. But when it's constantly in our face, when that's part of our world, we will have to start to make better decisions. And also, there are so many other things conspiring in our lives now. We know that the employment scene is more fractious than it ever has been before. The certainty's not there. We know that our kids are going to have to work, most probably into their 80s and maybe beyond. Retirement age is shifting. Both government, societal, and all sorts of reasons are pushing that later and later. In other words, you and I have to do so much more with the few meager dollars that we have. We really want to become more savvy. As we're able to become more savvy and have more control over it, again, I think that we will.
Mm. What about the not too distant future when we may not have any physical money in our wallets? We literally just use a device. Is that not going to distance ourselves from that whole money thing altogether?
I'm not sure that we'll ever get to that point. I think we'll become a less cash society. We certainly have less in our wallets physically than we had before, apart from bits of plastic. As you said rightly, we will get rid of the plastic very soon too, and it'll just become digitized onto our mobile phone or onto a device that we're carrying with us. But it's not really important how we spend it. It's, again, the knowledge that we have spent it. We're not waiting for that once-a-month bill anymore. It literally shows. So what we have at the moment are a whole lot of apps around that will literally scrape, and scrape is simply the word that means, with your permission, absolutely your permission, it'll go into all of your bank accounts, so your superannuation, your loans, your normal retail banking, bring it all together onto one screen for you and give you a real snapshot. You have really good banking sites. This is America only at this stage, called Simple. Simple was just sold for $117 million. The idea was so good. They came up with what I call plain English banking. that allows you again to bring all the information from all your sites. You're the only one that can see it. No one else has access. But what it does is it allows you to budget really easily. So all you do is say to it, really simply, I want to be able to go on a holiday. It'll cost me $5,000 in December. And it then goes through the finances in your webs, in your all of your accounts, and works out what that means for you, how much you have to save, what extra money you might have to put in. So it's actually looking at your loan repayments, at all of your spending habits, at your other budgets, and it's working it out for you. And simply day by day, which is why it's called simple, it reminds you and it puts those money into the right accounts, tells you if you spend this, you're not going to make your budget. So we're seeing more and more of these financial coaches type apps around. I think that's why we're going to get better at it.
Very interesting, isn't it? And very, very close to our lives over here in Australia. If it's happened in America, I'm sure it'll be coming over here. Maurice Misolowski is with us talking about the future today. We're talking about the future of your money and that intimacy that we need to maybe reconnect with. Just in terms of that dashboard, if you like, just for want of a better word, maybe it is a dashboard so you can see exactly where you are. You feel that by having that dashboard and that closer connection will make better decisions. I don't know why.
I do, because I think that, well, in the last 40 years we haven't, and this is the average person, of course, not everybody, but the average person really hasn't made wise decisions. To me, it comes back to that human trait knowledge. And I've seen time and time again that where we can get away with something, even though the person we're fooling is ourselves, we choose to, and we'll take the long-term ramifications. When we see these things in front of us, though, when it becomes obvious that we are moving towards a goal that we want to save, that we're not going to have enough money to pay off the mortgage this month, or that the kids' shoes can't be bought if we don't curb our spending right now with that extra cup of coffee, when those things are told to us minute by minute, second by second, I think that we're going to make better decisions. Again, not everybody, but I think most people will. We're also moving into a space, though, it's not just the apps, though. I think the whole sort of society is going to move forward down this space again, because we're working longer, we have to make do with less, there's more uncertainty around. And also the notion that baby boomers and Gen X, Gen Y, Gen Z are comfortable looking for advice and information. In other words, they don't necessarily know how to save better or necessarily how to invest better, but they know what they have, and they're able then, or comfortable then, going to an advisor and saying, here's my information, I'm going to let you in real time, and you're going to be part of my financial health and well-being tribe. So my accountant, but for my financial advisor, myself and other people, this is everybody, I mean, regardless of income. And collectively, we're going to help to move me forward into a space where I am able to live far longer and be able to have money so that that lifestyle continues in the way I want it to. And governments are going to have to help us with that, because they can't help us with pensions. Even with the best of intention, they can't help us with those. And they've said that in many ways. So I think there will be a lot of cultural shift and push towards this.
And what about the different generations, Maurice? The fact is we have lots of different demographics, some more savvy than others. How do you think this new financial intimacy will change some decision-making in that respect for different ages?
I think that what we're talking about here is really the notion that as a builder, which was a generation prior to baby boomers, they were a generation that was brought up on the pension. They didn't ask for advice. They did what they were told. And that was one set of money management. They were very, very good savers, though. They literally had nothing on credit would save off. Baby boomers kind of saw the notion of, well, that's terrific, but I'd rather spend some money now. I don't necessarily need to leave huge inheritance for my children. And baby boomers, which is one of me, are spending happily. We're also more comfortable asking for advice. We also don't necessarily want to take the advice first off. In other words, we're looking for wisdom. We're not just looking for somebody to con us or to give us bad information. But Gen X, Gen Y, Gen Z moving forward are really fascinating. They're very, very comfortable taking advice. They also have a completely different structure around what they think is important. Baby boomers builders, we were brought up with the Australian dream of having to own a home. And the way that we had proved, or one of the ways we proved that we were successful in life, was to be able to show a clear mortgage to the quarter acre block, to be able to show some asset base. The Gen X, Gen Y, Gen Z aren't necessarily as switched into that. They don't necessarily care about that. What they care about is having a nice home, having a nice car. But if they're renting it, if they're sharing it, if they have some other means of being able to use it without owning it, they're really cool about that. So we're talking about a very, very different asset base, a very different way of saving and what they want to do with their money as well. It's not necessarily going into paying off a hard asset for Gen X, Gen Y, Gen Z. It's more about lifestyle. But they, again, I'm finding I'm getting better and better at budgeting because they realize that they want to have these things in life. They have a limited income in whatever that is, and they're going to stretch their dollar as far as they can.
Mm. Let me ask you finally about financial institutions and how they fit into the mix here, because it might be in their interest that we don't know exactly what is going on so that we can stray into that expensive space, if you know what I mean, when fines come your way.
Oh, so now you're the futurist, James. So really what you've said is to me what the reason that we don't have them in Australia. That what we have in Australia are the banks who are taking to the apps and taking to the new digital retail spaces. But when they're building these apps, unlike many that are built in America or that are around European banks, is they're saying you can bring your information in from as many sources as you want, but we're not allowing you access out. So in fact, if you want to change something on one of those accounts, you've actually got to go back to that source account and make that change. So it's making it really difficult. There's one bank that I know of that's doing that, and in fact, they are saying in their figures that they are closing, that they are getting customers to close many of their other accounts because their customers are enjoying that bank's app, and it's too much effort to go back to the other account somewhere else, so I'll just close off all those and bring it in. Our banks, by the nature of them, really are still very much working in the space of being pillars. In other words, this is our bank. You will do it within these confines and not move beyond. Now, I know that there'll be lots of conversation. I hope there will be that that's wrong, but the evidence I'm seeing is that it's still not. There still is very much this silo effect in Australia and with many of our institutions. We've got to break through that. And the reality for them and for us is that we don't need their permission anymore. It's not as if there's only a physical bank, there's digital banks, there's lots of products. And we're seeing lots of people come into the space that are non-traditional bankers, like Simple, like Apple, like Telstra and others. So if they don't get together with us, then we'll find another way around them. But we will find a way around them eventually.
It is fascinating. I just love the way that, as you say, things happen and they happen so rapidly. Maurice, thank you. Very interesting, the future of finance. So what's around the corner? Maybe a corner that isn't too far away altogether. We'll chat to you again in a few weeks, and thanks for your time today.
Look forward to it. Have a great weekend.